in trouble.
It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to The Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined today by Albert Breer of SI's Monday Morning Quarterback. He began writing the MMQB column when Peter King left SI for NBC, and today it was announced that he got a new promotion with added responsibilities. Albert, tell us what's new about your title, role, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, and look, this opportunity, when I got it 2 years ago and decided to leave NFL Network, a big piece of it was, you know, this could eventually happen. And, you know, Peter was fantastic as far as, you know, kind of helping me through the process and everything else. And so I knew 2 years ago that this could be the final result. And, you know, I really started, you know, into this role in June. I think it was the first Monday in June, the second Monday in June when I started writing the column. And, you know, now a piece of my job is going to be to help creatively push the site and creatively decide where we want to go and help drive where the content's going to be. And, you know, we've got a young staff, and I'm really excited about that part of it, actually. That was part of, you know, the appeal in coming here was the idea that we could build something. And so, you know, trying to be innovative, trying to be fun, trying to do a lot of different things with all the talented people that we have. I'm pumped about that part of it. You know, it's just such a challenge, I think, for all of us in this industry to reach a younger audience. And, you know, the advantage I think we have is we've got a younger staff. And I think it's our challenge now to start to think younger. And I'm really excited to get started with that part of my job, too.
So what time on Sunday night / Monday morning do you file this column as complete?
Well, I honestly, during camp, it started to get pretty late. Like, you know, when you're in the off season, it's easier to manage. During camp, like it would probably be, I want to say maybe like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning when I would file it. Just because there's more work you're going through, more things are happening. You've got to kind of allow for, you know, a bomb to go off somewhere on Sunday afternoon or Sunday night, and then you react to it because, you know, we don't dictate what's in the column. The news dictates what's in the column. And now that we're into the season, it's a little different. I mean, I'm juggling television responsibilities with the column on Sundays, which, certainly is going to be another challenge for me. And so this week, I think I filed it, and God bless Mark Moravec for staying up with me and hanging with me on it as my editor. But I think it was probably 3:30, 3:45 when I filed the column this week.
So one of the – you quoted, like, Tom Brady's dad in the column, and, like, I assume you're going to do a lot of that the same way that Peter did, where you're trying to track down newsmakers or people close to them for on-the-record quotes really in real time. What percentage of people you reached out to on Sunday night got back to you, and what percentage just like never got back?
That's a great, I mean, I think from most people did get back to me, but there are a few like, you know, I can't do it. And the advantage that I have is I've been doing a notes column for a long time, you know, and this goes back to the Boston Globe. And, you know, I wrote in Will McDonough's old space in the Boston Globe, which, you know, was incredible for me because I grew up reading Willie. One of the reasons I'm in this business is because of Willie. And so I kind of took what I did there to NFL Network, and I wrote a notes column there, and that's sort of the basis for it. And one thing I've learned doing it is that you're going to put out more lines than you're going to catch fish, you know, and you're going to put out a bunch of lines, and, you know, you're going to see what comes back. And so, I'm at the point now where I don't have very many people ignoring me, but, you know, certainly I think you have to be ready for the, we can't do it this week, or, you know, let's check back in a couple weeks and maybe we can do that. And so I would say I put out, you know, a lot more lines on Sunday night than people I got a hold of. You know, I'm trying to be respectful of time constraints that everybody has and the rush of being after a game and everything else. And so I don't know what the percentages were, but I definitely got like a few more no's than yeses. And, you know, you work your way through those and you try to be respectful of the people that you're covering and that they're not always going to be able to get back to you, you know, and go through with the idea of a full interview. So again, there wasn't any like flat out, like I can't remember at least anybody flat out ignoring me, but there were a few respectful no's.
A couple years ago when you left NFL Network for the MMQB, you gave an interview with Boston Radio that described working at NFL Network as a little bit limiting. And so in the last year, due to reasons not of necessarily of kind of like the Me Too, they were from the Me Too movement, a lot of the management at NFL Network got upheaved and sent out. And so given what you said, it implied that you had some clashes with management there. Did you feel at all vindicated when all this news came out?
No, I never want to see people lose their jobs. I mean, I don't think it's good karma to think that way. And, you know, I honestly felt for a lot of my friends who are still there. You know, one thing that got lost in all of that is, you know, the amount of respect that I have for so many people that work there. And I've still got a lot of people that I'm close to that I still communicate with on a regular basis that work there. I had a great 6 years there. You know, I made a decision at the end like that, you know, I talk about my experience. I do it once. And I do it on the record. And, you know, it just so happened that, you know, Boston Radio asked me about it. I was honest and forthright about it. I felt sort of bad the effect that that had on some people that I really respect and think do a great job. And, you know, I was never my intention to hurt anybody there. And so my answer to your question is, no, I don't think there's any sort of vindication seeing anybody lose their job. And I love and respect a lot of people that I worked with at NFL Network. And I still have a lot of great memories from my 6 years there.
Switching gears to the National Football League, the biggest story coming out of the week was Aaron Rodgers. It seems like he's playing this week. Is that your bet?
I think we still need to wait for Wednesday to see. I mean, that's really the dividing line. I would think he'll try to give it a go. It's a big game. You know, they're playing the Vikings, and I mean, this is the kind of game that could have implications when we get to January, right? Like, it could be the difference between traveling somewhere on wild card weekend and getting to stay home and get a week off, you know? And so I think he's going to do everything he can to play. I think it's too early to be able to tell whether or not he's going to be good to go.
If you had to set a line of when you think Le'Veon Bell will be playing for the Steelers again, will he be back soon, later, or never?
I think he's going to be back by the end of the month. And that's just a guess. That's not based on reporting. I mean, there's institutional knowledge there. I just think that ultimately the idea of losing $1 million a week, it's going to get to the point where it's just not worth staying away anymore. I also think James Conner, the way he played, maybe could give Le'Veon some peace of mind that they're not going to just run him into the ground, that they do have a solid second option. I thought Conner played great on Sunday, notwithstanding the one bad fumble. I thought he showed he can bring a lot to the table. And I think the other thing that's interesting here too, Ryan, is I just don't think it's any sure thing that pot of gold's at the end of the rainbow for Le'Veon. I it only takes one team. But I'm not so sure there's this massive deal waiting for him in 2019. And if
especially
that's even in the back of his head.
Having a running back, if they didn't have one, you could see them being the type of team that would really take a lot.
I lost you. What did you say?
I said, especially with the Cowboys already having a running back, if they didn't have one.
But any team, though. I mean, like, look, like he's 27 years old. He's got a lot of tread on his tire. He's got injury history. He's already, you know, served a suspension. He's, you know, one step away from a suspension that could wind up being a year. And I don't think that the comments that Ramon Foster and Al Villanueva and Marquise Pouncey, I don't think those comments they made last week help him. You know, I think that that's another thing that other teams have to look at. And so there's just a lot there with Levy.
So good, though.
I'm not saying he's great. He's a great player. Like, he's a different type of player. In 2018, the prototype for the running back, the new prototype is – You know, you want a guy who's 230 pounds and can play on all three downs. And that's what Le'Veon is. He's an every down back who's capable on third down. So there's, you know, I don't think there's any question that he's one of the best players in any position in the league. It's just the value of that position is too easy to find guys at that position. And he brings a lot of baggage with him, which, you know, leads me to believe that even if that is out there for him, there's not going to be this long list of teams lining up to get him.
Okay, so every year when teams go 0-1, we see the stat. Teams that go 0-2 are 90% chance not to make the playoffs. Now, some of that is correlative and some of it is causative with the short NFL season. It's a hard hole to dig out of. But a lot of teams that go 0-2 are also bad. So these are the matchups of 0-1 teams that are almost loser weaves town matches this weekend. 49ers, Lions, Bears, Seahawks, Chargers, Bills. We know the Bills are dead, but if the Chargers somehow lost, then they're probably dead. Texans, Titans, and Cowboys, Giants. Are there any of those 10 teams that if they do go 0-2, you think they could go still make a run and make the playoffs?
I tend to look at like teams with new coaches where, you know, sometimes you might have an 0-2 or an 0-3 hole where, you know, they're still sort of figuring some things out, you know, and it may be may take them a little time to kind of get where they need to go. So, I mean, the Titans would fall into that category. The Giants would fall into that category. And I think the Texans are another one where you look at the Texans, if they fall to 0-2, you know, it really hurts. And I think that division, while it may not have the quality at the top that some of the NFC divisions have, it's still deep. Like, I don't think there's a bad team in the AFC South. If the Texans fall to 0-2, I still could see them bouncing back because I think Deshaun Watson is going to be better in the second half of the year than he is in the first half of the year. What we saw on Sunday against New England wasn't really stepping into his throws. You can tell he doesn't trust it quite yet. And I think the offensive line issues sort of compounded the problems that he was already having. I think he's the sort of player where, you know, you could see the Texans for the first 6-8 weeks of the season stumble around a little bit, and maybe they go 4-4, and then he gets his feet underneath him, and all of a sudden, you know, he's leading them to a big second half. And he's not the only guy coming off of injury there either. Also, J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, they've got a bunch of guys who are coming back, so they may be a team that could withstand an 0-2 start, just looking at them on paper.
The most shocking result of the weekend was Bucks Saints. Was that a random blip, or is the Saints defense terrible, or could the Bucks actually be decent with Fitzpatrick?
No, I don't think the Saints defense is terrible. I do think that we all, for obvious reasons, because it's our first piece of evidence in 9 months, we all overreact to week one. I'm guilty of it. I think you'll admit you're guilty of it to some degree.
Oh, definitely.
We're all guilty of it, right? So I think one of the reasons why you maybe want to put a little less stock in week one, every team to some degree is chasing ghosts. Like, there are new coaches, there are new players. Teams have been spending the last 8 months trying to get ready for these opponents. And sometimes I think you see teams come out in week one and look a lot better than they are. Sometimes you see teams look a lot worse than they are. In this case, I think the Saints offense was fine, right? Like, they scored 40 points. The Saints offense was not a problem. The defense, to me, like, you know, you're dealing with a first-year play caller in Todd Monken. You know, you're dealing with a quarterback who you haven't seen much of late in Ryan Fitzpatrick. And the Bucs have, like, legitimate skill weapons. Like Mike Evans, DeShaun Jackson, Chris Godwin, I think, is going to be a really good player. O.J. Howard coming back second year at tight end. I just think that there was sort of a mix there for this to happen. Is it sustainable for the Bucs? We'll see. And I think what's going to be really important is the obvious thing is how do they handle the re-entry of Jameis Winston in 2 weeks? I think the Saints, I like the Saints' defensive talent too much to draw too much of a conclusion from what we saw on Sunday. I look at the talent over there, Marshawn Lattimore, Cam Jordan, like lots of good players on that side of the ball. So I think the Saints are going to be just fine. I'd be a little bit more sure of the Saints coming back off the canvas than this being sustainable for the Bucs.
I remembered another MMQB question I have, so we're going to switch back to that real quick. The MMQB, especially under Peter, was very like nuts and bolts football. Now, there would be human interest and stuff, but not a lot of fantasy, not a lot of gambling. SI has launched a gambling vertical, and just based on the way they position gambling stories on their homepage and through social, it's clearly a pretty big priority for them. How much thought have you given to adding that type of content under your umbrella, or do you want to keep it separate?
A ton. I mean, I think we absolutely have to consider what the consumer wants. And, you know, I'll still go back to what I, you know, what I remember my producers telling me when I was at NFL Network, and we do the Sunday morning shows, and they would tell us, you know, this is who you're talking to. You're talking to fantasy players and you're talking to gamblers. You know, the level of engagement from those people is generally really high. And the level to which they know the game is pretty high. And so I don't think it makes much sense now that the environment's changed where gambling's, you know, going to be legal everywhere before too long. I don't think it makes much sense not to engage that. And we're going to be working on some projects that are going to involve the gambling end of things, you know, both in how people approach the games week to week, you know, like how the fans approach the games week to week, and then the bigger story of how this affects the NFL in general. And so I certainly think that the whole subject of gambling and fantasy, too, I think is going to be a part of everything that we do, or a lot of what we do going forward.
But going back to football, the other thing, it wasn't surprising that the Ravens beat the Bills, but it was surprising how lopsided it was. How can they justify going into this season with Nathan Peterman as their starting quarterback?
I think it's a fair question. I think that the question, the secondary question that you want to be asking here, though, Ryan, is it's what's good for the Bills, but it's also what's good for Josh Allen. They're clearly investing quite a bit in Josh Allen. And, you know, look, like right now, they'd be putting him behind an offensive line that lost Cordy Glenn, Richie Incognito, and Eric Wood in the offseason. And they're clearly in a rebuild right now. And so I think everything that they do has to be done with the long term in mind. Look, when Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott got there, they saw an operation that needed to be turned over. In year one, they did the cultural turnover, right? Like there was the actual, like, you know, this is how we're going to think. This is how we're going to do things. They got tremendous buy-in and made the playoffs. I think in year two, it's almost been, okay, now we're going to make over the brick and mortar here. Everything's going to change because things were really sideways before. And these are amazing numbers. Sean McDermott got there in January of 2017. There are only five Bills draft picks left from before that. Five Bills draft picks, period, on the roster from before Sean McDermott got there. They're carrying $53 million in dead money this year. That means $53 million on their salary cap. Almost a third of their salary cap is tied up in players who aren't on the team. So they knew they were going to have to go through this at some point. I think it's unfortunate for them to some degree that this coincided with when the rookie quarterback was coming in, but they were going to have to do it at some point. They decided this was the year to rip the Band-Aid off. And so, I know it looks like Nate Peterman can't play, and I was defending him until last week. I don't know that I can do that anymore. But if your quarterback's going to get knocked around, I can certainly see why it makes sense to say, okay, we're going to put Nate Peterman out there. He's going to take those hits. We can't have Josh Allen, who's still pretty raw, who's still learning. We can't have him out there in that environment.
Today, my boss and our mutual friend Jason McIntyre wrote a story that the Browns and Giants already have to be regretting passing on Sam Darnold. Now, we already got caveats of overreacting.
He loves Darnold.
Out of the way. If you gave some of those executives and coaches truth serum, they're like, okay, he's ready now, more ready than it seemed. I don't know. Do you think that the Browns might want a do-over, or the Giants, if given that we now have a game of tape on them?
Well, I guess it's like the whole, you know, who's Hakeem Olajuwon and who's Sam Bowie then, right? Like, if you get Hakeem Olajuwon out of it, then you're okay. If you get Sam Bowie, then you're not. Look, I know how much the Browns think of Baker, and I don't think they would take it back right now. You know, I think what they've seen from Baker has been steady progress. I talked to Hugh Jackson about this a couple times. I mean, what he keeps emphasizing is that he just doesn't want to saddle Baker with everything that's happened there the last couple of years and the history of first-round draft busts at quarterback, really since the Browns came back into the league in 1999. That makes sense to me. Like, if you're really going to – if you don't want to saddle him with it, fine. You know, then play Tyrod and – you know, I think that's sort of been their approach, that they didn't even want to open the door to him playing. So we just don't know. And I don't think they'll know for sure until he gets out on the field. The Giants one's interesting because I think Saquon Barkley's got a good chance to be the offensive rookie of the year. And the thing is, if Sam Darnold is as good as the Jets think he is, there's almost nothing Saquon Barkley can do to make himself more valuable than Sam Darnold would be because of the position value. There's almost nothing that Saquon Barkley can do, you know, to create a situation where you would say that the Giants didn't mess up by doing this, because you'd potentially have the chance to pass the torch in a Montana Young, Favre Rodgers kind of way and say, okay, here's our next one. Eli's passing the torch eventually to Sam Darnold. To have that sort of situation, you know, I just don't know what Saquon Barkley could do to make them say, no, we wouldn't take that, save for the idea that maybe they wind up getting one over the next couple of drafts.
Is there anything we didn't talk about in the NFL or with the MMQB that you want to
tell me, Ryan? You tell me. What do you got?
Well, I don't know. I know you have a hard out. So the other, I don't know. I guess I'm interested. I swore on Richard Deitch's podcast that I was done talking about this subject at all, but you did a lot of reporting on it last year, was Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. You wrote that NFL teams did not have a starting quarterback evaluation on him. Florio wrote in that in court, citing a source, that some teams at least did. Do you think that – what was your – response to what Florio wrote, and do you think you will ever play in the NFL again?
I really, I respect what Mike does. Me and Mike are friendly. I don't have any problem with him doing his reporting. I do my reporting. I mean, I think some of the language that I used in that reporting, I shouldn't have said every single evaluator. That was stupid. But the teams I talked to didn't have a starter grade on him, didn't look at him as a starting level quarterback. And I thought that was part of the problem for Colin, was that, you know, no matter what it is, if you bring a little extra to the table, like if you bring something off the field to the table, whether you've been in trouble, whether it's, I mean, with Tim Tebow, it was religion. Like if you bring something extra to the table, then you need to be that much better. And, you know, a point that I was making is that if a team views you as the fifth best player in the roster, you can bring a lot extra to the table. Like there's going to be a lot of extra stuff that teams are going to be willing to deal with. It's when you become, when it's like now all of a sudden the guy's going to be the 30th or the 40th guy in the roster, that's when teams start to do the math a little bit differently and say, well, do we really want to do this and this and this, or do we want to just sign that guy over there who will blend in with the furniture? And so I think that's sort of where that was a problem for Tebow too. Like that was a problem for Tebow 5-6 years ago, where, you know, I think part of the issue he had in finding a team was, well, if he's our starter, then we are willing to deal with the satellite trucks and the parking lot and the round-the-clock coverage. But if he's our backup, we don't want to create that problem for everybody else. I think the same sort of dynamic was there with Colin, which was what led me to that reporting. I don't think anybody at this point or when I wrote that viewed him as a starting quarterback as a team. Like, I don't think there are teams that view him as a starting quarterback. I'd be interested to see what some of the – and that was what my reporting told me. I would be interested to see – some of the court documents and the evaluations that the court was able to get on that. And I like I said, I really respect, you know, I respect the job that Florio does. He's a great service for all of us that cover the NFL for a living, being kind of this clearinghouse for all NFL news. We just had a difference of opinion on this one, or a difference in reporting on this one, I would say.
I would say I think that Kaepernick is somewhere between the 25th and 40th best quarterback. And
let me say this too, Ryan.
By my NFL quarterback evaluation.
So, and that's fair. But I one thing I think that people don't realize is, like, a starting grade doesn't mean like one of the best 32. That does make you a starter. But like the way a lot of these teams grade players, they'll say, okay, well, we view it the way we see it. There are 22 starting caliber quarterbacks in the NFL. There are 50 starting caliber guards, and then you've got replacement caliber or developmental caliber. Like, it's just the nomenclature is kind of where things might have gotten mixed up a little bit there too.
All right, thank you very much for coming on. Once again, this is The Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. That is Albert Breer. He has assumed Peter King's role at the MMQB, and look forward to reading him and watching him throughout this football season. Thanks again, Albert.
I appreciate the time, Ryan.
All right, bye.